You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, have been called forever chemicals. That's because these synthetic chemicals are incredibly durable, lasting thousands of years. This durability has made this large group of chemicals useful in a variety of industries, from cosmetics to electronics and cookware. However, PFAS have been linked to a myriad of health risks, including cancers, liver damage, and suppressed immunity. Bad news, given their ubiquity within the environment and humans. Recently, the Australian government moved to sue the manufacturing giant 3M for $2.4 billion New Zealand dollars for their use of forever chemicals in firefighting foam, which contaminated numerous Defence Force bases across the country. While no such legal action is yet on the cards for New Zealand, increased attention is being given to the presence of PFAS in our environment. In 2022, PFAS were for the first time included in the suite of compounds analysed in a quadrennial groundwater survey. However, there is still a lack of information on how present PFAS are in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So later this year, the Environmental Protection Authority will be engaging with councils and other agencies to carry out further groundwater testing to learn more. So to learn more, I spoke with the Environmental Protection Authority Acting Manager of Hazardous Substances Applications, Dr. Sean Presso. Kia ora, Dr. Sean Presso. So starting off, can you tell us just a bit about how testing and monitoring for PFAS works? So given that there are thousands of compounds, how do we go about identifying them?
Yeah, hi. So testing for PFAS is really complicated, and you're exactly right. Because of the huge number of compounds, PFAS are a class of thousands of different chemicals. We do a kind of screening test where we look for commonalities that you would get from those chemicals within the class. You can look for organic fluorine, which is a component of PFAS compounds. And then we also go into more detail and look into more depth for substances that we know are more problematic or are more likely to be there.
Right, and it must be difficult to avoid contamination of the samples when these compounds are so ubiquitous.
Yeah, so that is a huge issue and something we've come across before in our own testing from the EPA. We did have a case of contamination from our own testing equipment, which led to a false reading. And this is because, you know, in some greases you get PFAS components and machinery, and then that can contaminate your samples.
So, I mean, how do you go about mitigating something like that?
So the Ministry for the Environment has put out a really good draft guidance document on testing or for ultra-trace testing for PFAS, so at very, very low levels. And this gives you sort of advice on how to do it, how to take your blanks, what equipment you need. And basically it's making sure that everything you're using is not contaminated.
Right, and I mean, it must be tricky given that so many products use PFAS but don't necessarily have an available kind of listing of that in their product.
So I think for the sampling industry or business, there, because you have to know exactly what is in the material you're using, there's a lot more communication about what is in the stuff that is being used for those sampling activities. And that's just needed because, you know, even if you're not sampling for PFAS but you're sampling for other things, you want to make sure that you're not getting sort of false positives.
Cool. So the EPA is going to be working with councils and other agencies to carry out further groundwater testing after a survey that happened back in 2022. So how is this study that's in the plans, how is this one going to differ from the one that was conducted back in 2022?
So every 4 years, the regional councils, they do sampling of groundwater in their areas with the support from PHF Science, who organise the whole program. We're supporting that activity as well, and we did in the past, so in 2022, we asked for sampling around PFAS specifically. This time around, we're going to do that again, but we're looking for a broader range of wells. And we're looking for a slightly different combination of substances as well, but also some of the old ones, because it is interesting for us to see, do numbers change, you know, every 4 years? Eventually, we hope to build up a really nice sampling over a number of rounds where we can see what the trend might be in the groundwater.
Right. And I mean, when the analysis of these data is complete, I mean, what would you expect to see? Would you expect any levels higher than, for example, the maximum acceptable value for drinking water, or a more kind of lower rate across the country?
So I would expect to see relatively low levels, especially below the drinking water maximum acceptable value. That is what we found in the last round of testing in 2022, except for one site that was a site of known contamination that was a bit higher. But yeah, generally across New Zealand we expect low levels, but this is good for us to go out and see this and to generate that background of sampling so we know what is out there.
Right, because in the past there hasn't been, or there isn't currently, that kind of knowledge around the levels of PFAS across the country, right?
Yeah, so there's been a bit of testing done. Some university groups have done some testing. We've done this little bit of testing. We want to build up a more consistent picture and one that's across the whole country, not just in certain areas.
So how does regulation work with PFAS? I mean, what's the process behind identifying some of them as persistent organic pollutants? Both, I guess, looking at the Stockholm Convention and also for regulation within New Zealand.
Yeah, so the Stockholm Convention is an international convention that regulates certain organic pollutants, or persistent organic pollutants, or POPs. Some of these POPs that it has regulated are PFAS compounds, and this convention is designed to phase out those substances that are the most harmful and most dangerous and stay in the environment causing harm for the longest period of time. In New Zealand, we implement the Stockholm Convention through our own Hazardous Substances and New Organisms Act. And this act also allows us to approve substances for import and manufacture in New Zealand. And that's where we can also look at different PFAS compounds and say, okay, are they approved for this use or not? And under that act, we have recently amended the Firefighting Chemicals Group Standard and the Cosmetic Products Group Standard in order to remove PFAS substances from those uses in society.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of an interesting side of it in that PFAS had been phased out of firefighting foam entirely, partially to avoid kind of hopping from one harmful PFAS to another. So, I mean, to what extent is regulation of PFAS, given that there are, you know, thousands of compounds out there, to what extent is its regulation a game of whack-a-mole when we, you know, study one of these groups and find out that it has harmful effects and maybe transition to another one that perhaps also has these effects? I mean, is there an argument to ban this group of compounds entirely?
Yeah, so that is a risk. We refer to that as regrettable substitution, where you're just swapping out one problematic chemical for another one. And that was the reason in the firefighting foams that we banned different classes so they wouldn't switch from one class to another class of PFAS. And that's also the reason that for cosmetics, we banned the class of PFAS chemicals as a whole. Even though some of those chemicals may be fine, it was decided that the risk of regrettable substitution would be too high and that the use in cosmetics was not essential. That's something that needs to be done on a case-by-case basis, basically, when we're looking at a regulatory instrument. Does it make sense in that case, or is that not likely to be an issue? And that's, you know, we need to make that assessment before a decision is made.
Right, and I mean, I guess we wouldn't want to be jumping the gun on anything if there aren't actually any detrimental health impacts to it. But to what extent, I guess, is there kind of proactive research into these areas? I mean, are you able to do quite broad research, I guess, internationally on large groups of these compounds, or is it more, like, specific?
So both. I think internationally there's a huge amount of research going on both, like, PFAS compounds as a class and contamination and environmental risks, but also individual PFAS compounds and the effect that they might have on the human body or in the environment. And with that information coming in all of the time, we're keeping tabs on that to see things that may be relevant or not relevant for New Zealand and seeing how that may impact our own position on certain substances. We're pretty lucky in New Zealand. We haven't had the huge contamination issues that they are seeing overseas, particularly around industrial sites or manufacturing sites. And so generally we have a fairly low level, or quite low level of PFAS in the environment here.
That was the Environmental Protection Authority's Acting Manager of Hazardous Substances Applications, Dr. Sean Presso, on PFAS testing and regulation in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.